Welcome to Model Minority Moms, where we talk about the meaning of success in career, family, and life. We are Jeanette Park,
Kate Wong,
and Susan Liu,
Harvard classmates and Asian American working moms who get real about the pressures of fitting in while standing out.
Greetings, greetings, and welcome to another episode of Model Minority Moms. Today, we are going to be talking about how to screen for a baby daddy. You heard that right, baby daddy. I think oftentimes, especially in my 20s, I was just so obsessed about finding this prince charming that was going to whisk me away and save me, and then I'd be happily ever after. Yes, I believed that Barbie Disney fantasy. And it's been a very interesting thing to finally get married and be like, what's all the hubbub about? You have kids, and then you realize, oh my God, the romance has been stripped away, and now we're just trying to manage this entity called our child and our household. And what I thought I was looking for in a partner is actually not what I really needed in a co-parent. And so we're going to just get real about that today, talk about what we've observed in our friend groups, and give some advice of, if we were in our 20s again, what we would be thinking about when looking for someone not just to spend the rest of our lives with, but also to raise our children with, and hopefully together. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Pretty spicy stuff. All right, ladies, I'm curious, now that we've entered toddlerdom with our kids and dated a lot of other parent friends, right? You've seen a lot of parents at your schools and stuff. I'm curious, what kind of dads have you observed? We all know about the dad joke guy with the dad bod, but have you seen a range of how dads show up? Can we talk about like not engaged to engaged? What type of dads are there out there?
Oh my gosh, there's a term in Chinese. I love it. I learned it after I became a parent. I'll say it in Chinese first and then I'll explain what it means. Nai, ba. It literally means nai is milk and then ba is dad. And that's to refer to dads who are like, you know, like,
are they breastfeeding their kids?
No, no, no.
They're wearing a bro. Do you remember on Seinfeld with a bro?
No, not that. So you know the term uxorious to describe a man who's besotted with his wife?
No.
No, I actually don't okay. know that word.
Oh my God, I know. Where the Jeanette doesn't know.
Uxorious? No.
Yes, I uxorious. Don't. Guys, look it up. U-X-O, uxorious. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's like the version of that, but for children. A man who is so besotted and so engaged with his child, he does stuff the mom does besides breastfeeding. Basically, all the mental load, right? He buys the kid diapers. He buys the kids like clothes. He like does all the school stuff, like the arranges for the extracurricular activity. So imagine most of the tasks that fall on the mom usually, but the dad does that.
I don't know why, but the words like dragon and unicorn came to mind. I'm like,
I mean, it is a unicorn dad. This is very rare. I only know a couple of these, but they exist. And they both are Asian. So I don't know if this is like a phenomenon that's like uniquely like an Asian thing. But in America.
Okay. Sorry. I don't want to open up too many lines of conversation right away. But I will say that one observation that I have had is that among the folks that I know, my friends who are dads of Chinese origin do tend to seem to be more adept at things around the household and just more equal distribution of household responsibilities. And I wonder if some of that is because of communism in China. And you could say a lot of things about communism in China, but it does seem like one of the things was it did, there was a systematic push, not perfect, but to elevate women in the workplace and kind of create at least some aspiration for more equal gender roles?
I'm going to say no, and I'll explain why. Sexism is actually worse in many ways in China. I won't go into the reasons why, but I think the reason why you might be observing it in the U.S., and this is my personal theory, is that people who are dads now who are Chinese, they were born only children if they were born in China. Incredibly spoiled. Did nothing for themselves, right? So if anything, they're actually worse than your typical dude.
They don't even know how to put on their socks at age 30.
However, if they have come over to the U.S., either for undergrad or graduate school, guess what? Mama, grandma, no longer there to clean up after your ass. No one's wiping your butt for you. So these people have to learn, relative to their counterparts in China, to be much more engaged domestically. Because I do also see this among the dads in my daughter's school, like the Chinese dads. This is my theory. But when I compare them to the dads in China, they're like a subset. So I think there's something about the process of coming to the U.S. that makes you like have to deal with domestic life shit.
Yeah. And maybe my end is not huge. So this might not be a systematic thing, but it is something I was wondering.
But you are right in that the Naibas that I know are Asian, specifically second generation Chinese American. Hmm. But I also know a lot of those. So the sample is limited.
Self-selection.
Yes. But that is a unicorn and the most like on if you're talking about extreme end of like engagement.
I'm sitting here thinking this person would only exist if he was a single dad where there was nobody else. Then he would do all these things
that the wives are there.
I've never met a Naiba before.
Jeanette?
Just saying.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. I mean, I only know two.
They like exist, according to Kate.
Yes. Well, no, they exist. I know them.
Okay.
Hi, Rick. If you listen to this, I don't think you do. But hey, Rick, you're a Naiba. We all know it.
Oh.
Anyway.
Rick. All right. So then I don't know what other types of dads do you see? Like, are there dads out there that literally do not dad hard at all? Like they just, I don't know, pet their children or something like when it's convenient. Have you seen totally detached fathers?
I don't really feel like I see, at least in our peer circles, dads who are totally detached.
That's like Mad Men era, right?
Yeah.
Right now, like millennials, that's not cool. It's like smoking in a restaurant. You're like, oh, you don't do that.
What I have seen are dads who start off not engaged. There's like a longer path for them to be more involved. Like it takes longer. Because I think some people just jump in and they're like there and rah, rah. But I think for some people, especially depending on what their lives have been like before having children, like they're big partiers or they were like bankers and they're like having this life. And then we're having kids pretty quickly now because everybody's getting married later in life, right? So it's sort of like you get married and then you start having kids almost try to have kids immediately. I've seen some men who it's been a little hard to get past that hump of like literally one day you're like, do whatever I want. Like I go to my card games, I do this, I go hang out with my bros in like Vegas or whatever. And then the next day, like there's a little baby human. So the process, it takes longer for them to get like switched over. And they have a choice, right? Because the mom doesn't have a choice. She can't run off. She's literally stuck with the friggin' baby. You know what I mean? But the men, they can just like, I don't know, go somewhere or not be there or what have you.
I think for some men who don't know what's going on and they literally need coaching, enter in couples therapy. You know what I mean? Like all of a sudden, the way that the relationship used to exist cannot exist any longer. And they need explicit direction on how to be better instead of like, I feel like as a woman, I'm always thinking on how to improve and like considering everybody else. And then I'm like, I don't know why men are from Mars or whatever, but they need structure to get there and they can't get there. Or I've seen that having kids is so stressful and the romance kind of fades because you're just trying to keep the boat afloat. Really, there's so many tasks that I see that there's a choice where the partner can just become disengaged because it's so tiring or they're getting yelled at all the time. And then there's a disengagement. I don't know. People get separated and divorced. Like they're not going to cut it. I see that happen too, which is really sad.
Yeah. It would be interesting to see any data on divorce rates relative to the age of child. That's a very depressing chart. I have a strong hypothesis that when your kids go off to college, there's a big divorce spike there, right? Because yeah. A lot of times the parents are just kind of trying to hold it together until the kids are old enough where they don't like depend on the parents so much. And then as soon as they're out of the house, it kind of falls apart, right? I mean, that happened to my parents, essentially. That's one way you could tell the story. I saw it happen to many people that I know as well. And it seems like you guys are nodding your head. You probably have seen it too. But then I also think that there might be another spike around the time the kids are a little younger, maybe around age 3 to 5. The age where you kind of are like in torture, really, like the two parents for 2 years, and then you decide it basically breaks your marriage, right? I'm not blaming the child. The child is at no fault. They did not ask to be born. This is all on the parents. But really, the act of parenting is so difficult. And instead of kind of being able to like figure out a way together, it's kind of breaks their relationship, right? And they just decide that we have to figure this out each on our own. And so I feel like I have another hypothesis that there's kind of like another bump in the curve, which is earlier on in the child's life.
I agree with that, Jen. And I think I'll add another detail where I feel like there's also maybe two bumps. One is after one child, and then the other is after two. Because as we've discussed in previous episodes, 1 + 1 does not equal 2, depending on your children, like more than 2.
Nine.
And so like I can speak from personal experience that what was really hard for our marriage
wasn't having the one child. It was actually after the second child was when our marriage, I think, was at its lowest. And Nirav just told me yesterday that one of our friends told him that they almost got divorced after their second child. So I think there might be a couple bumps there for when the children are young.
Yeah, at the end of the day, when your child is age 0 to 18, that's the lowest satisfaction rate of your marriage in general. This is just what happens. And then when they go off to college, maybe your marriage changes and it enters a new chapter and it gets reclaimed and improves, or it eventually collapses.
Wow, this is really depressing.
Great outlook on that. I'm curious. I love it when you tell stories about your marriage, actually. So I'm curious about your partners. How did they show up as dads that you'd like to commend them for? Because the struggle is real. And I think when I was pre-kid, I did not understand, like, why is parenting so hard? Like, why are you suffering? You chose this situation. I had no empathy for parents because I didn't understand. But what are things that your partner does where you're like, wow, I didn't anticipate that this is what parenting is really like. And that's a quality that's really awesome in my partner that makes him a good baby daddy. I'll go first. So right now we are co-sleeping, where Art really wants to sleep in our bed and he feels safe there. And I'm kind of like, we're one and done, so I'll entertain this for a little bit. And I was reading this meditation book on parenting. It's called The Inner Work of Parenting or whatever. And it was like, just let the kid do it and they will know when to graduate. And so what happens, though, is Marvin will have to get up early to have early work meetings and commute, or he'll have to get up early and take a flight somewhere. Sometimes in our beautiful king size bed, my husband then goes sleeps in Art's turtle bed that we got from IKEA. And there's like turtles everywhere. And it's like this underwater, wonderful thing that is a sanctuary that we created for Art because he loves turtles. And my like nearly 6 foot tall husband is sleeping in a twin size bed and he'll just go do it, you know, because he's like, he's so obsessed about his sleep score, which I'm always like, why do you have to check your watch of what your sleep score is? Can't you just feel like how you rested you are? He's like, no, I want an 88. And I'm like, okay, it's out of 100. Okay. And I was like, this is so dumb. Like, why do you have to ask your watch anyways? So when he needs to make sure he gets rest for work or whatever, he goes to sleep in the turtle bed. And it's just a thing, or he sleeps on the pullout couch. It's just a part of our lives now. And there's no complaining about it. There's no resentment. It's just the truth of the matter, because sometimes my kid's foot is on my throat and he's jabbing me at night. And I'm just like, whatever, this is life, right? But Marvin just like, we'll just go to the turtle bed. I want to commend him for just, I don't know if it's taking one for the team, because really I'm like, maybe I should go to the turtle bed. There's something around just bearing through stuff, right? You're not going to be in a luxurious, restful state all the time. And it's having to roll with the punches of like all the ebbs and flows of the phases of your child. So anyways, Marvin, turtle bed. What about you two?
Yeah. No, I think that's a super important quality. And I think one that I see in Jake as well. He has a lot of resilience, I think, just like overall, but I think especially with our kids, like when they are having their emotional ups and downs or not sleeping or whatever, I think that he is more able to roll with it. And you could also argue that, you know, I will put a little asterisk there that I also probably do bear a little bit more of the load of dealing with those things, but he does too. And I feel like he is able to kind of deal with it. And also just looking at things more from like a structural or like a systems perspective of like, oh, maybe kid X is like hungry, or they're not sleeping well, or maybe they're feeling ill. You know what I mean? Not just like looking, because it's so easy to get caught up in like the emotional whirlwind of, oh, he's melting down, or she's melting down, or they're not doing this or whatever. And, you know, it's very easy, I think, to be caught up in the behaviors of the moment, but just to be able to take a step back and just say, what else is going on that's making this more likely? So I appreciate that. I mean, there's a lot that I appreciate about Jake as a dad. Obviously, another asterisk, things aren't perfect. There's a lot of room for improvement, as we all do. But I think some things that I really appreciate are he just like really loves hanging out with the kids. He loves being silly with them and spending time with them. Like, he truly values it. And so I am thankful, because I think that's like kind of hard when you're like asking them to spend time with your kids. That's just like a hard thing, right? Not that you always want to be spending time with your kids all the time, but in general, there's like a big element of enjoyment.
Wait, and so what I'm hearing there is, he can be in the present moment.
Yeah.
he values a ton with his kids, but also it's kind of like reducing your ego a little bit, right? Like, he's not a man child in all of this where he's taking it really personally and getting reactive with the kids. And also, what is devoid in parenting is social accolades, right? No one's giving you a reward for being a good parent or being present. There's no social recognition at all. In fact, you get negative social recognition, like you're disturbing the peace on the plane or whatever. So it's like finding a partner that doesn't care so much or isn't playing that game anymore. And I don't know if it's like something you can assess with the person, because it transforms you, right? And you all of a sudden become very interested in drawing on cardboard. Like, you're like, I'm going to do it now. And maybe that's not something you can test if that's someone is into that, right? But I don't know. There's something around the ego-ness of it.
Yeah.
If you become a parent.
Yes. Yes. It's something I do value a lot, is just being present with our kids. So I think it would be hard for me if my partner wasn't on board with that, but I feel like he is to a similar degree that I am. So I appreciate that. And I'll just like mention one last thing, which is, well, I know this is outside the context of parenting, but it's related, which is like, I do think he tries to make sure that he and I are okay. Probably more than I kind of tend to put the parenting responsibilities much higher kind of level of my priorities. But I think for him, our relationship is a little bit like, you know, when it comes down to it, like, he is checking in on it more often. And I think that's a helpful balance, because if he and I are not okay, then obviously it's going to affect the kids, even if it's just kind of in the water. And so I appreciate that about him.
So like emotional intelligence, like strong interpersonal relationship skills.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. We're trying to focus on the positives here. But, you know, there's like one, also, yeah.
Yeah. But he has some conscientiousness around.
Yes. These are big positives.
These are big positives.
These are big positives. Yes.
Kate, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with Jeanette. This seems like such a basic thing, but Derev actually likes kids. So unlike me, as I've mentioned multiple times in this podcast, I'm not a huge kid person. I like it when you're a kid and you like to talk about books that you've read. You and I can have an intellectual discussion. But like the zero to whatever, before you can have that discussion phase, not interested. I forced myself to volunteer at my previous church's children's ministry with three-year-olds because I was like, oh my God, I don't know these things, these creatures. Let me familiarize myself with them. My point is, even before we got married, we would be around friends' kids, and Nerev really likes them. He like actually genuinely enjoys hanging out with especially younger kids. That's his favorite phase. He doesn't like it when they start asking questions later on. It's like, good, we're complimentary. I take over at that phase. But with our kids, he really loves hanging out with them. It's like not a burden. If I ask him to, hey, can you watch the kids? Like, I never feel like I'm like somehow making him do something he doesn't like to do. And he enjoys our friends' kids, right? They're like some of our friends' kids he just really loves hanging out with. And I think that's really great. And you're like, duh, shouldn't your husband obviously like kids? I'm like, no, actually, that's not a given. I have seen people whose husbands are like me. Like, they don't, I mean, they love their kids, but they don't enjoy spending extended periods of time with their kids. They do it out of obligation because they're the parent. But what I'm saying is that what I appreciate about Nerev is he actually enjoys, he likes it. He likes kids, period.
That's cool. Marvin did not like kids. I have plenty of nephews, and he did not play with any of them. He did not play with any of them. But there's something like very egotistical. Oh, this is my kid. Or he kind of looks like me. Or what if his behaviors are in the likeness of me? There comes a point where you just fall in love with your kid. And then after you put your kid down, what are you doing when you're exhausted? You just look at pictures of your kids to get a dopamine hit and be like, oh, remember this time. Maybe that's a transformation that happens once your kid is born. Right. And then you're like, oh, it's a mini me, my little Dr. Evil, a quality that I think I didn't realize what I needed in a partner was just like your, I don't know if it's grit, but it's just like ability to slog. And okay, maybe this was a precursor, but Marvin and I would go mountaineering a lot. And I was the complaining one. And I would always be like, just throw the Cheez-Its at me and leave me in the dust and go on without me. I don't care. Let the crows eat me. And he'd be like, we just left the parking lot. And I'm like, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to summit. And we went through some really hard, long trips together and multi-pitch climbs, but he just never complained. It is hard. It is a suffer fest. It is type 2 fun, where it's not fun in the moment and it's fun as a memory. I think that's with parenting is like, oh my God, we thought this flight would be a good idea. Did we pack all the things? Oh my God, check again.
Like, it's so tiring. Think about every solution to curb a loud child and its partner. You're on point to do this and that. And it's just like constant tasks after a while where you're just like, to even maintain, there's so many things around pooping and wipes and supplies and sicknesses and who's awake and have you checked this thing with that insurance? And there's just so many layers of tasks that is just non-ending. And like, do you have the endurance to keep going? Because it is very debilitating and tiring. I don't know what the word is in the quality. Maybe you can help me here. It's just like endurance.
There's a Chinese word for this. Let me throw out my second Chinese phrase of the day. Like Jeanette's Korean idioms, there's a term called 吃苦. It literally means eat bitterness. Yeah, it's to describe someone who can eat bitterness, meaning they can slog through shit. They won't complain. They'll just persevere and they will deal with stuff.
Yes.
They won't back down or give up easily.
Yes. I've seen some marriages where cis hetero marriages, right? So I see the husband just like making it about them, having their needs, not following the directions. And then it cascades into more problems and more management. And it's like now there's two children that you have to care for. And sometimes when I see that happening, I'm like, I feel bad for the wife because you're also having to manage the disappointment and the disciplining of your partner in addition to your kid. So it's just so much burden and work on the mom. And I'm like, oh my God. Like I see their marriage crumbling and I go, would they have been better off if the dad isn't in the picture? It's terrible to think, oh, single parenting and to get divorced or separate the family. But then I look at that and I go like, the mom's going to go, she's going to lose her marbles.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also just think that this is like a highly under-discussed thing, right? And I don't want to fearmonger about like having children, but when you have kids, it puts the stress on the marriage. I remember this one friend was visiting me from Boston and we were having lunch with her, me and this other friend who we all knew in Boston, but she's also now here in Seattle. We all got together and had lunch with this friend from out of town. This friend is married, but doesn't have children. Not sure if she wants to have children with her partner or like just overall. My other friend who's now here, she has three kids now. And the woman without the kids was asking her, so do you think that having kids puts pressure on your relationship? The two women, we look at each other, we're just like, yeah. It's not just common knowledge or something that's commonly understood that when you have kids, especially more than one kid, it is an immense pressure on the relationship. And I think you just have to kind of look at it like somewhat practically. Yes, differs by the person, their resiliency and their ability to slog, right? But everything has a breaking point, right? And your relationship dynamics, like the way you interact with each other, the way you feel about each other is going to be impacted by the amount of stress of your life. And having a kid will add significant stress to your day-to-day. And maybe it would be better if we all just understood that, right? So that it's not such a surprise when you get there and you are also choosing a partner or a co-parenting person who you're looking at through that lens of, I want to have kids with this person. What is that actually going to be like? Because I know now that parenting is really hard. It's just like nonstop, daily, every moment, like I have to pay attention to somebody else's needs.
Jenna, I think there's hubris there because when you're pre-kid, you're like, I don't know what's the big deal. Like all these parents saying they're all tired. When I'm the parent, I'm going to be so chill about it or whatever. If there's something where you think you're having trouble, that I'm not actually going to have trouble. You know what I mean? There's this, oh, that's just because they're high maintenance. But really, it's you just don't know what it's like to have this small thing that doesn't have a fully developed brain, that doesn't like, is not rational. They're just not rational.
But very demanding.
Yes. And they need you in this deeply all-consuming.
They don't know how to wipe their butt. They don't know. They just don't know.
Or they don't want to wipe their butt when they can. They just don't want to.
Oh my God.
Or maybe they might want to stick their hand in there sometimes and then take their hand out and then shake it all around because it feels gross because they're touching poop. And you can't fly off the handle at them. I mean, you want to in your heart. You just want to be like, why the hell did you do that? That's gross and disgusting. You can't.
There's so many variables, right? You might have a partner that was like doted upon by their mothers. And so they don't think to take responsibility or think to be considerate. Then you have this child that's smearing poop everywhere. And then you're like, oh, my God. And you're late to an appointment. And then you have a presentation. And when are we going to take the car for an oil change? It compounds so much.
Speaking of this, it reminds me of before I had kids, before I got married, I'd always hear this adage that was like,
wait, what's an adage?
Adage. Sorry, I have these like weird, anyways, adage, whatever. That was like,
I don't even know what that
children.
Means.
Oh, it's like this, a saying, right? Like,
why don't you just say a saying? Why do you have to say adage?
I don't know. I'm not trying, Susan. It just comes out of my mouth. I can't control that.
It's not that I'm fashionable. I just have good taste. Keep going.
Okay. Anyway, that, having children will just transform you. You may be one way. But then once you have kids, it was like basically somebody who talking about a man, a husband who's like, oh, well, he could have been like this. But then stories of how he became this totally different person after he had a child. Fake news, guys. Fake news. Women, yes, because you literally go through pregnancy. You're literally, as Jeanette pointed out, I think in many episodes ago, your brain literally changes when you have a child as a woman. Right. But guess what? That doesn't always happen to the guy. So I guess what I'm saying is that women, the guy's previous relationships actually do matter. I realize this, like, how have they been conducting previous relationships? Unless they've done a lot of like work throughout them, like with maybe they had a really bad relationship where they were like a total shit show to their ex before, but then they did a lot of work on themselves. Great. I feel like I've seen stories of people who like get married to guys who like have had this, you know, they were just like this before, the certain way. And then expect somehow like marriage and having a child to magically transform the person, or how like they, the woman, can like, I will change this bad guy because I'm special. Guess what? You're not special. Having a child will not change that person if they don't want to change themselves, if they aren't committed to working on themselves. And I think this is something that is, I cannot emphasize more. It's not where the person's starting out, right? It's like, how are they willing to keep improving? It's total what Susan said earlier. I feel like, yeah, in general, the women that I know, a lot of women are like, you know, we're always changing. Like, we're kind of forced to do that. We're always looking out for other people. But a lot of guys, for whatever reason, you could say it's because maybe men weren't introduced to therapy. It's like a taboo. Or yes, all these things can be true. But I feel like guys in general are just less likely to want to seek out self-help, right? But we all need it. And so I feel like when you're looking at a guy, should this person be my baby daddy and raise children with me? What is this person's ability to really seek out change and improve? Actively reflect, right?
And I'm going to put it on the woman too. If it ain't working, what are your non-negotiables? And what are you going to say that needs to change? I tell you, every time I come back from like a hot springs vacation with my mom's gone mild friend, I come back, first thing out of my mouth when I come in the door, Marvin, okay, A, B, and C need to happen. Otherwise, it's over. And he's like, what? How was the trip? I was like, we need to do couples counseling again. We got to restart that up. And also, you need to do individual therapy. And he's like, but why? What would I even talk about? I'm like, that's exactly why you need to go. But I get like really clear. And then I say, no more. Because I think pre-kid, like when you're married, there's some cracks in the relationship or like things are kind of annoying and you kind of allow it to slide. But if you ever wanted to put your relationship in an Instant Pot and turn up the valve and see what happens, you're either going to get a nice thing or it's going to all explode and the whole thing, like the machine explodes and you're like, oh my God, I forgot to twist the little ladle thing that's all shaky. Oh, you're like, I don't know how to use this machine. I broke my Instant Pot, by the way.
Oh my gosh.
How?
I don't know, but the bottom
that
is all like
dangerous.
Yeah. I know. Maybe I should be an air fryer person now.
But you don't have an air fryer?
I don't.
Okay, we'll discuss this offline.
Maybe I should do it for Black Friday.
We got to discuss this offline. Okay.
I know. Continue. I heard it's transformational with the chicken nuggets. Anyways, the point is all of this is whatever is dysfunctional will crack because children have come, right? Because now it's so many layers of other things that you just can't manage at all. I'm going to reference a girlfriend who shall not be named who listens to this podcast, and she's having a baby. And she was like, hey, do you think once my baby comes, me and my partner can just hand the baby off and like still go to work remotely and like, you know, when they're 0 to 3, that we can just hand the baby off and just
schedule our meetings at different times and just switch off the baby.
Between the two of them.
Between the two of them during the workday. Like, no childcare, no nanny, no nothing. And I was like sitting there going like, I asked her, I was like, do you think I'm really efficient and task oriented? Do you think I try to get shit done? Do you think I'm intense? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, I could not do that, dude. That's why if more people could do that, they'd do it. They'd want to save all that money. But it's actually really hard to do. And I still think that there's a part of before the kid has come, you just don't know how uncontrollable the whole situation is. You know what I mean? Like, I have mastitis. Oh, my God. Like, I'm engorged. Oh, my God. The hormones are crazy. And I'm in a pit of despair. And when I look at stars, I start to cry. It's something you have never experienced before. So to try to explain how much it'll just mess, stir the pot even more is so hard to explain. And it's so hard because I see girlfriends that are aging and they're like, I need to settle down. I got to find this partner. I got to have the babies, right? Because your internal clock is true. Like, you are running out of time. And then it's like, do you settle with that partner? Are they going to sleep in the turtle bed? You know what I mean? Are they going to go have an affair because they don't want to be controlled by their screaming wife, whatever, who's just so frustrated at them because they're just like, I'd rather have a different life and disown my family. It's like when you do the vows and they're like, through thick and thin. This is the thin part. 0 to 5 is the thin part. And are they going to stick with it? And if there's problems, are they going to have the ownership to take care of those problems and have fun while the poop is being smeared on the wall? That's the question.
This reminds me of this conversation I had with a good friend. She's a few years younger than us. She's turning 35. And we have mutual friends who are also around that age, 34, 35, 36, unmarried, not in long-term relationships. And she was saying that they were talking about having kids and whether or not to freeze their eggs. She's going to, because surprisingly, her parents are on her ass about it. She has Chinese parents, which is very unusual.
But she was saying, if you're over 30 and you're not married, you are seen as...
Yeah, well, her parents want her to freeze her eggs. They were like, we want grandchildren. We know you don't have somebody right now. But that's unusual because in China, there's like a stigma around egg freezing IVF, right?
Oh.
Yes. But that aside, she was saying our other friends were like, we don't need to have kids. If we meet the right person, we'll have kids with them. So we don't really need to freeze our eggs. And I was like, sorry, I can't scream loudly because you said last time. I just go, no. Is that better?
No.
I was like, that's the whole point of freezing eggs is that it's in... insurance. What if you don't meet that person who's going to be your baby daddy until you're 40 and you didn't freeze your fucking eggs, your 40 fucking year old eggs? That's most of the tragedy that I see in people going through IVF is that they didn't freeze their eggs and now they're 40, 41, 42, 43, married or found their life partner that they love and actually want to have kids with. And they're going through suffering, emotional, physical, mental, because they do multiple failed IVF cycles and they cannot get pregnant or they cannot keep that pregnancy. So people, yeah, you may not like kids. Maybe you say, I won't have kids unless I meet the person I want to have kids with. But you do not have control over when you meet that person, whether you're 34, 35, or 45. And if you want to have a kid, freeze your fucking eggs. That's all I'm saying. I'm going to send this episode to those girls and be like, girls, listen to this.
I think you probably already told them to do it.
I did, but they need to hear it some more.
You can just be a GIF and it'll just
be I know, can I try to pass into GIF?
You can just be on repeat. You know what? I think like my 20-year-old self, what I didn't realize, I was always like, oh, I got to get plan B. Oh, I'm so afraid of getting pregnant. And you don't realize as you age, because as you live your life, you think if I work hard at it, it'll happen for me. That's how I always.
Yes, that's how we overachieving Asians, right?
Right. And then you don't actually realize in your mid-30s, I can work as hard as I want at this and it might not happen.
Yeah. Like your 40-year-old eggs, they're not going to turn back time and become 30-year-old eggs.
Right.
That doesn't work. We're not at that state. And we don't have artificial wombs right now.
Right now.
Eventually, maybe. But, you know.
Right. And so there's this part of it like, oh, well, if I feel like it, then everything will come together. And I hear you in an affirm. What you're saying about insurance, and this is really about negotiation, is to still have some options on the table.
Yes.
For you to have if you change your mind, and who you were in your 20s is not who you are in your 30s. I never saw myself as mother material. I had my own work to do around that because I lost my mother when I was 11 and had to do my own work around learning about my mother and confronting my own issues around seeing myself as a mother. So I had to do my own inner journey work. And then I happened to find a partner and he actually wanted kids. And I was actually pretty on the fence about it until I could do my stuff around my own career. And then I was ready. So it's just not a linear decision-making process.
Exactly.
And it's just nice to have some options on the table. And it's really great if you work for a large corporation and they subsidize parts of that process if it's possible for you. But I also got to say, Kate, what we haven't talked about is just that sheer pressure from your family to get married and have kids, like hurry it on up, and how I think that can really cloud thinking, right? There's just so much pressure around, oh my God, my journey as a woman is not complete until I get married, until I have kids, right? And it's terrible because those family members who pressured me to have kids are not the people who are taking care of my kids.
No.
You know, and I think that's very annoying because I'm like, you're trying to help me do the thing I'm supposed to do as a human. But at the same time, I'm bearing the work of all of that. And along the way, I feel pretty ashamed that I'm like messed up goods if I don't do it by a certain time. And I'm still getting that pressure. They're starting to quiet down about kid number two. But it's very frustrating because it's like my worthiness is tied to this almost. Not almost, it is to them. But then I'm not getting supported in it. My heart goes out to the women who struggle there. It's hard because I think in the 20s, like once people start getting married and you go to a bridal shower, you're a bridesmaid, you keep going to all these events and it's just, well, what about me? I'm a good person. I should go through this rite of passage. Why not me? And it's hard because if you don't find that partner that will truly slog with you, or your friends don't tell you at your wedding that you're making a big mistake because you didn't ask, like, hey, am I making a big mistake? If you don't ask, no one's going to tell you. And then any of those problems that you saw a mile away, they will collide in your face when the baby comes. It will collide. It is inevitable. And so it's like, raise a kid in a very dysfunctional household, or not raise a kid at all and continue getting that judgment from your elders. And or, you know, you always feel like you wanted to be a mother and then you don't get that option. So when we talk about trying to find your baby daddy, it's hard because I think it's also fraught with all this other pressure too, right? It's not just finding this unicorn milk dad. It's just kind of scary because what if you really want to be a mom and the cards aren't lining up for you?
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of women in that situation. I think we had discussed prior to this episode just about the topic for today and how we should do maybe like a separate topic just on the state of women in the US and just in developed countries overall, how women are achieving at higher rates, but then also men aren't quite keeping up in terms of many metrics, but how that's also kind of blowing up a lot of traditional dynamics around finding a partner and marriage and co-parenting. Yeah, I feel like that is something that we're all experiencing, you know, but kind of getting some play, I feel, in the news, but it's not nearly enough. And I think part of it is some of these topics are really hard to talk about, actually, because what if you are like a woman who wants to find a partner and have a baby, but then you're not finding a suitable partner out there, right? Then like, what do you do? Do you just become a single mom? Do you just forgo having a kid? Do you just marry somebody who you are not 100% about, but then do it anyway? Even after you get married, what if you are actually earning more than your spouse, but like that's your spouse is also not picking up the slack at home? So you're like essentially on 2.5 duty. You're like have to hold down the job outside the home, hold the stuff down at home. Then what is your partner doing?
And then you scroll on Instagram and you should do self-care. And you're like, with what time?
Yeah, I feel like that whole thing is touching like so many aspects of everybody's life and kind of plays into this conversation, but it's kind of like a bigger topic that we should discuss on a different episode.
100. All right. Yeah. Freeze your eggs. Don't settle. Find your turtle bed, man.
Well, I don't know. Is that where we're going? Like, don't settle? Is that the advice?
I would say not to. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
I don't know. I think for me, the reality and the realistic options are more complicated because if you are a woman who really wants children, let's say you're getting older and you're not finding that person who's the 100% fit, I think you could have a rational choice around like going with somebody who maybe meets some of the criteria, but not all of it, or figuring out a scenario in which that person is not a romantic partner, but is a co-parent. I don't know. I just feel like the answer to me, I wouldn't want to necessarily say like, I think the right answer is don't settle. Because life is all about trade-offs. A lot of those trade-offs are highly imperfect. And so I just feel like in the environment that we're in, I could understand making the trade-off of finding somebody who is not checking maybe all the boxes, but also can get you on that path to motherhood or whatever.
Fair. I don't think there is a partner out there that checks all the boxes.
Yeah.
I don't think that person exists. But I will say that if you're in a relationship where alarm bells are going off and you're unhappy, like I'm going to think about one of my relationships where I used to cry in the bathroom and lock the door and I didn't want them to come in. And I really tried to get out of the relationship a number of times and I was stuck there for many reasons. It's not going to get better. If you already know intuitively you shouldn't be in this relationship anymore and you're going to see, well, if we get married and have a kid, maybe things will change. I just think that's a bad recipe. And that's what I'm saying. Don't settle. If you just know that there's things that are dysfunctional and that person doesn't want to work on it, get out because it's only going to get harder. That's what I'm saying.
Yes, I agree with you. If that person is not interested in getting better, doesn't have some of those fundamentals, the probability of it getting better is very low. But I think the caveat that I'm making is, so have like realistic expectations for what this is going to look like. No matter what, whatever you think, having a kid with somebody else is going to put your relationship with them in an Instapot, like you said. It's just like, are you willing to deal with whatever comes out of that Instapot? And it's very, very hard.
High pressure.
High pressure. Cooker.
Yeah.
But even with that caveat, I wouldn't personally make the blanket statement. That's not going to be the right choice for some people. Some people might say this relationship might end up being a shit show, but I'm still going to have a kid with this person because ultimately being a mom is a very important thing to me. In my current environment, like this is the person that may make most sense where I am.
I know. It just might add a lot more work and complications down the road.
Yes.
It's about people, I think, people being very aware of the trade-offs that you're making, being realistic, I think, and also revisiting the topics because how you feel about one thing when you're 30 may not be how you feel about it when you're 35. And I think for women, no one's going to be looking out after you, your fertility, your future outcomes other than yourself. And so women really need to look out after themselves in that way and do just regular check-ins and think of how many times we've been so dead set on something. And then a few years later, like Susan said earlier, we're dynamic. Circumstances change. We change, right? And there's nothing shameful, I think, about that and saying maybe you didn't want kids, but as you're getting older or you see friends with family, you're like, I want that. And that's great, right? But just revisit that, I think, is really important too. And there are certain situations where there is maybe not a good decision, but I think there's a lot of gray area, like Jeanette said. But I think even in that gray area, you want to be clear about what you're getting into. Just go into things with open eyes about the realities of what you're getting into. Kind of like Susan was saying earlier, like, okay, having kids, there are certain things that it encompasses and
be realistic.
My God.
I remember one of my single friends who listens to this is, you are really helping me affirm my choice to stay single and not have children. I was like, sorry, but I wish I listened to this type of content before I walked into it. I don't know if I would have changed, but it's just good to know the real, real. All right. So those were our tips on finding a baby daddy. Good luck to all you women out there and to all you women who are partnered. I don't know. Maybe it's time to talk about some non-negotiables. So for today's insight thought, since we're talking about our dream baby daddy and things we wish we would have known, I'm curious, when you were like 10 to 15 years old, who was your big TV movie star crush?
Oh my God, this is so embarrassing.
Yeah, I have one that's very embarrassing. My sister always gives me shit for it. But the first one was, do you remember watching Third Rock from the Sun?
Yeah.
And Joseph Gordon-Levitt was like so cute.
He's still around.
Still cute. I know he's still cute, but that was one of my crushes. But here's my really embarrassing crush is David Spade.
Why?
My sister's like, why are you like scrawny white men? I was like, I don't know. I don't know. I thought he was really funny. And then I look back on it. I'm like, oh my God. And like also Edward Norton.
Oh my gosh, Edward Norton. I'm so but, there with you.
Yeah. So anyways, I like skinny.
Daniel Day-Lewis too. No.
As Abraham Lincoln.
No. Before Abraham. No. Not as Abraham. Yo, gross. Abraham Lincoln's amazing. I just don't have a crush on Abraham Lincoln in that way.
Noted. Quotable.
All right. So now you know my David Spade thing. What about you? Who were your dream crushes back then?
I'm trying to think. Okay. I mean, I never had boy posters on my wall or anything.
You didn't get those magazines with it, Bebop?
No. Or I remember going to a friend's house and she had this huge thing for like JTT, Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
This is like, this is like when, this is like when we were in middle school or even earlier than that.
Yeah.
JTT was like a thing, but I don't know. You could see it however you want, but certain guys, it's not like I didn't find them attractive or something, but I was like in a monk mindset, basically. I was single-mindedly focused on my school just because I really liked school. But I think more than that, on some level, I just saw it as a way out of my family's situation and dysfunction. So I just did not pay that much attention to boys at all until I got to college. And then I think when I quote unquote made it to Harvard, that's kind of when I felt like I could relax a little bit. Listeners, you guys could hear some of our back catalog and my story with Jake. But really, when Jake came into the picture, I was like, okay, like I'm open to going on dates, but I'm not looking for a serious relationship. So I think that's kind of when the door started like cracking open a little bit. But like really throughout my middle school and high school years, I was not paying attention. I did think Patrick Swayze was kind of cute. And that's maybe a little bit gross. So when I was in high school, again, backstory reference, I went to boarding school. Freshman year, I lived in a dorm with 40 other girls. There was 40 girls in one building and one TV. And one of the few VHS tapes that we had was of Dirty Dancing. And so I probably have watched that movie like, I don't know, 24 times. And there's something very attractive about Patrick Swayze in me. So anyway.
I like how you only give him kinda cute.
I mean, I think mostly the dancing is sexy, but his whole hair and the 80s sweaty vibe, I'm not so into.
Wow. I didn't think you were going to. Of course, your answer is like totally different from mine, but I'm like, wow, you have. I wish I had that nun discipline. I think I would have gotten way more done in my life.
Different conversation.
Okay, you got into Harvard. Yeah. No worries.
Whatever.
Yeah. Different conversation.
Dot, dot, dot. Jeanette, we'll put a pin in that in the parking lot. And Kate, how about you, crushes? Oh, I know your Chinese opera, traditional, classical, whatever.
What?
But...
No, I don't do Chinese opera. No, I did think Edward Norton was cute, but this is really embarrassing. Do you guys remember Mulan? Like the animated Mulan? Not the live action Mulan?
Yeah.
It came out when we were in high school. So we were like 15, 14, 15. Do you remember the lead male character in Mulan?
Yeah, a cartoon character.
Yeah.
Yeah. That guy?
This is really, yes.
I mean, he,
it's like, maybe that just speaks to more just the lack of
Asian, exactly.
Yeah, like Asian males.
And look at Mulan, like, she goes off and fights, and then she meets this good looking cartoon.
You're just like, what is like an Asian American man I can attach my romantic hopes to? There,
guys, when we were growing up, there's no BTS, okay?
There was HOT.
But I didn't know HOT back then.
Okay, so HOT, for those who are not Korean American, HOT was like the OG boy band of K-pop. Actually, they're Korean American. I will add that. There's an interesting route in K-pop where a lot of actually the initial stars were actually Korean American, just separate note. But HOT was kind of like the original K-pop band that really started the whole thing.
So wait, it's HOT, not hot?
Yeah.
It's-
H-O-T. Followed by later on G-O-D, not God. Yeah,
but so Christian.
Ask me no, I think they were quite non.
They were pagan.
Yeah, it was very pagan, very pagan.
I mean, listen, okay, it wasn't just the cartoon character. Okay, there's some hot Taiwanese, Hong Kong actors like Takeshi Kaneshiro, very hot.
It's
then.
Okay, Kate, you don't need to like humans. Fine.
I'm just saying, in addition to
the cards, and this is why representation matters. We need more Asian males on screen, because otherwise we'll just have crushes on cartoons. The end.
We hope you found something helpful, reassuring, or interesting in this episode of Model Minority Moms. If you enjoyed the episode, please help us spread the word by texting a friend about our show or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you want to connect with us, please visit our website at modelminoritymoms.com or follow us on Instagram, where we love receiving messages from our listeners.